Oh, bowed. Yeah, that'll show him. Japanese version of telling somebody good afternoon.
I was going to say the equivalent of have a magical day.
Yeah. For our listeners, if a Disney person says have a magical day, it means go fuck yourself.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
How's it going, boys?
It's good to be back. Any news this week?
I watched Shin Kamen Rider. It was really fucking good.
Shin Kamen Rider? I'm excited.
I want to watch that.
We're talking about doing that as one of our specials, right? That's definitely something to look forward to.
Let's see. Small update for me. It turns out Bug enjoys Stupendium just as much as I do.
Really?
Yeah, he's been dancing a lot when I put those songs on. Also been doing a fun thing with him where, you know, the song Bingo.
What's his name? Oh, yeah. Yes.
He thinks it's hilarious where when I remove a letter, I change how the name is pronounced. So, you know, you start with Bingo and then you remove the B so it becomes Ingo, then Ungo, then Go, just O at the end. And he thinks it's hilarious. Oh, I think it's still too early for us to try and make, you know, any sort of decisive predictions on what we could expect from the show, other than I'm hoping they reveal which of two potential characters Agito actually is.
I'm going to call that it was our redheaded stepchild in the hospital bed that got reverse isekai'd.
So your guess is Ryo.
Yep. He had a Forbidden Kingdom moment where he got hit by a truck, went through a magical adventure with Jackie Chan and Jet Li, and come back with a dope-ass helmet with wings.
Okay. Just to make it more interesting, then, I'm going to go with Shoichi.
The other one.
Yes.
Sideburns.
Does he have sideburns?
We gonna find out today, aren't we?
The one who was vacuuming when he had his epileptic stroke.
Domestic seizure. Shall we get right to it?
So, let's jump into episode 2, Blue Storm.
Episode 2 is written by Inoue Toshiki and directed by Tasaki Ryuta. It originally aired February 4th, 2001. A jump to the sky turns to a rider review.
Well, okay then.
I enjoyed this a lot.
Mm-hmm. From the expanded costume roster to the clever application of grenade launcher. Let's take it from the top.
So we start the episode off with a recap of the fight between Agito and Ludius.
Maximus.
We get to see the cool kick again. We see Hikawa watch Agito stick the landing, not look back at the explosion, then walk away.
That, man.
And once again, Alpus and Tristis are watching, and it's actually Tristis who says Agito. And then we get the opening credits. And we're going to go ahead and get into this week's Tropusatsu.
Right off the rip, huh?
Yeah. This week, we're going to talk about bait and switch credits.
Ooh, ah.
So, credits are supposed to inform viewers about what's to come, draw them in. But, you know, obviously you don't want to spoil the whole show. You'll see it done different ways. Some series, Kuga did it a lot through symbolism and metaphor. We saw, like, the halo form around him, the lighting, all of that, to show the evolution of the character. Sometimes they'll use footage straight from the episodes, or sometimes they'll just lie. The most egregious examples of these might not even be white lies, but just depict what is effectively a whole other show. There are a few scenes in the Agito opening look like typical spoiler images. The girl crying out on her school sports field really seems like that's probably from this episode, or maybe an upcoming one, and it's never going to happen. There is the possibility that maybe this was footage from something that just got cut, but if that's the case, it was lost to time and we'll never know.
So I'm curious, would this include, like, a lot of times in anime, they'll have like slice of life stuff going on where the characters are in a different setting, but just doing daily life tasks. My Hero Academia, one of the outros, they're all in their same roles, but in like a medieval fantasy setting, like Bakugo's a dragon fighter, barbarian or something like that. Would that kind of wrap as well? Yeah.
That's an example of being an entirely different show.
I guess my thought would have been from the Kuga opening theme, where we saw a fight between Kuga with Badzu and Zuzenda.
Mm-hmm.
That fight never happened in the show. but like the three of them on their motorcycles going through, I wouldn't think of that as a straight up lie, even if it never happens in the show. That's just the footage for the credits. We cut to us when we see that Hakawa has gone through a full battery of medical tests because we're seeing the results of his MRI, and we're informed that he is okay. The armor may have been damaged severely, but he himself is fine.
Gotta love that ablative padding.
And Ozawa is very grateful to hear that he's okay. Maybe this is hinting that she's got more than a professional interest in him? It's too early to say.
I think you had the romantic interest thing on point there.
I think that's more into him stopping right in front of Ryo's hospital room.
Oh, yeah, that's fair enough.
Both.
Oh, okay.
It can be two things.
Yay! So Ryo is still unconscious, and the coach is there talking with the doctor, and the doctor's like, hey, so he's getting worse? Body's still overheating. In fact, the temperature's rising, and the spasms are happening more and more. It's almost as if his body is building muscle.
Yep.
What an odd thing to happen.
The homie's asleep doing a full body gym routine. Jealous.
Seriously, this is what everyone dreams of. Wait, you mean I can have a full high intensity workout while I sleep?
While I take a nap? Hell yeah.
Sign me up. Oh god, I already know the marketing tagline for it.
Fire for effect.
Go to sleep flab, wake up fab.
Ba-dum-ding.
I can be a sexy gym bunny twonk for no effort.
It's everyone's dream.
It's almost worth it to not wake up sweaty, though.
He is very sweaty. That's
being very sweaty.
Remember when Godai was just literal buckets of sweat after Inakita electrocuted him?
Yeah. Throw the bucket on that man. We got to film.
We cut the Misugi residence, and Shoichi is once again working in the garden, and Mana comes out and asks what Shoichi is doing. He's like, oh, sorry, I spaced out for a moment. And she's like, oh, is it because you remembered your past?
No, and stop asking.
Yes. And then he asks if the professor likes spinach. And she's like, I don't know. He goes, well, your dad's the professor's brother. Does your dad like spinach? If they're brothers, they should like the same things. That's not how this works.
That's not how any of this works.
Filial relationships dictate vegetable preferences, Jared.
That's not how it happened in my household.
I'm going to show you a study that I made up.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
You're making things up again.
You just got to do your own research, guys.
Oh, God.
I never thought that'd be a triggering statement.
This whole conversation is making Mana uncomfortable.
Much as she's making Shoichi uncomfortable, asking about his past again.
And he starts to pick up on this, and she's like, hey, you know how you said sometimes things are better left unremembered? There's a lot of my life I wish I could forget.
The fact that she's aware enough to say that, but not figure out that she should probably stop asking him about the memories that he clearly doesn't want to remember. Like, woman, come on.
She's getting there. She's got at least some self-awareness.
She's so close. So close.
We cut to the Saul conference room, and Hakawa is being questioned by the brass, because apparently the fight with Ludius lasted 21 minutes and 43 seconds, but they have exactly 12 seconds of blurry footage.
Which is about how long the fight lasted for us, too.
Yeah.
Which, very interesting.
And he is confused by this because he says that he was able to see the entire thing through the suit's cameras and does not know what would have happened to the footage. Did he delete something? Is it part of their AT field?
The police deleting incriminating footage from a crime scene? Jared, come now.
Taylor's oldest time.
Hikawa then goes on to say that he doesn't think the thing that he fought was a ULF, because if it was, then the G3's systems would have destroyed it. But his gun had no effect.
He says he doesn't think it was a UL.
They don't put the F on it, but...
Oh, no, dude. If we're going to get pedantic about things, this section, what they decide here in terms of the nomenclature for whatever these new organisms are, is going to drive me up a freaking... I'm going to end up in the next tree hole.
Oh, no. We'll have to find a new co-host.
I have options.
Bro, I could be replaced with a reasonably intelligent house cat. Like, don't oversell my value here.
I wouldn't have the same witty banter with a house cat. It pains me to say this, but he says that he doesn't think it was a UL, that it was something stronger.
Yeah, it hurts, doesn't it?
Does. Put the F back on it. ULF.
Alternate timeline.
Yeah, you're right. This is further proof that it's an alternate universe. Because they designated them ULs instead of ULFs. Ugh. However, they decide to go ahead and designate this an unknown.
Yes.
Instead of unidentified life form, just simply unknown.
I hate it so much.
So do I.
Same.
Hikawa is dismissed. And as he is going down the stairs to leave, Hojo is standing there waiting for him.
Everybody's favorite character, Hojo.
Piece of shit that he is.
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
I know. And Hikawa's like, oh, hey, how's it going? And Hojo's like, I looked up your file, and when they said where the Sol unit took you from, I thought you'd be like honest, salt of the earth, bland as toast, but you're a fucking liar. And Hikawa's like, you say what, mate?
I'm not sure which of those assumptions I'm insulted by more.
And Hojo proceeds to say that Hikawa is making up the entire UL thing to ensure that Sol stays around.
Oh no, she didn't!
And rather than haul off and punch him down the stairs, he's like, ah, well, you know, you're wrong. Bye. Bows and leaves.
No, no. He says it must be a slow day if the best detective has time to wait around for him.
Damn.
Oh! Sick burn, bro! Sick burn!
Yeah, you're right. My apologies for glossing over what is such a phenomenal burn.
We're on episode 2, and I already want Hojo to end up folded in a tree hole.
He almost did.
God, can we just wait around the corner, let this play out? No, we have to save him. Damn it. Dickhead's almost getting shoved in tree holes?
Nope, there's not a better way to phrase that.
You know I heard it after I said it.
Back at the G3 trailer, Hikawa is talking with Ozawa and Amuro, and he says that by the time that he got to the park, Miss Sayaki was already dead. However, he did find this photo, and he holds up a somewhat blurry photo of a kid standing in front of a lake with a disembodied hand on his shoulder.
Hey, they don't notice that yet.
No, they don't. They look it over. They're like, oh, this photo's taken recently because it's marked, what, January 9th?
Yeah, it's a weird photo.
Like 20th.
Little kid standing in front of a lake. There's a hand on his shoulder. The lighting is weird and hazy,
his
too.
His face is also half blurry.
Yeah, this photo is supposedly very recent, but it reminds me of like the damage you'd see if an old photograph got waterlogged.
Yeah.
Where the ink kind of
has started
smudged
to,
and blurred. Yeah.
But they look at it, it says January 20th of 2001. So presumably like mere days, maybe a couple weeks ago at most.
Mm-hmm.
Producer's note. The first episode of Agito aired on the 28th of January. It's likely this story takes place around that time.
Like, well, we need to look into this, because finally, Amuro notices the hand. And honestly, I am shocked that Hikawa hadn't seen it up until that point.
It was the first thing we landed on.
Yeah.
He is Noah Shijo.
Clearly. Back at the lab, Mikumo is making sure that preparations are ready for them to try and unlock H2 and 3. So, you know, well, the world didn't end when we undid this first one, so let's keep going.
Hey, stop it!
Yeah, you can get one click in Russian roulette. Doesn't mean you're gonna get another one.
While she is discussing with her assistant how long before things are ready for the next unlocking, Alpus and Tristis sneak in and touch cross and it causes a power surge?
Sure does.
I don't know to what effect this was for. It doesn't seem to affect anything else after the fact.
I get big Aristocats energy from these two. Like just slinking around breaking shit.
Power goes out briefly, comes back on. There doesn't seem to be any permanent damage done to anything. From there, we cut to the Misugi residence, and I guess that the professor is inviting his students over to his house.
It's not getting weirder at all.
No, not in the slightest.
This isn't that weird in doctoral programs. They tend to be smaller and closer.
Okay.
As not a doctoral student, I will take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I know at least at a point in time it was fairly common for students to go to the professor's houses. It just seems frowned upon these days.
Yeah. Yeah, and that might be the modern sentimentality leaking through.
Probably.
Though, I will say, at least one of these students is an indentured service growing crops in his yard to feed him with. I don't know about student-teacher relations, but serf and lord.
Shoichi is not a student.
Worse. That's worse. That man's an indentured servant. I have established my annoyed jetty cannon for the series.
Well, imagine my shock.
Yes. 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 Pull out your hair.
I'm so tired.
My favorite character is Hojo now.
You're making things up again.
Yeah, I can't even continue that with a straight face.
So the professor is real quick going over what everyone's thesis is going to be. He confirms that one of the students is writing their thesis on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And they're like, well, not everyone. The one guy still hasn't settled on his. And he's like, no, I really want to talk about superpowers. This is a safe space, right? I'm convinced I have them myself.
It's like I have ESPN or something.
You're like, we can debunk this shit right now. Get the cards.
He says that he can always tell when someone's looking at him, and he also knows when his phone is just about to ring, and these are his proof of superpowers.
Checks out.
Sure, they're party trick superpowers, but party tricks are still powers.
Yeah, in the same vein of weather prediction is, there's a 30% chance it's already raining.
And so the professor's like, all right, pissant, let's put a stop to this.
Fucking come here.
You're making things up again.
You were a doctoral student. We are done with this.
The professor is our Tsubaki for the season.
Yes.
All my friends are toxic.
And so he pulls out a deck of cards, and he looks at a card, and he lays it down, and the student guesses, and Shoichi guesses, I guess because he's allowed to be in the room.
He wanted to participate.
And Mana has been walking by, and she stops and looks in and sees what's going on, and despite the fact that she hasn't seen the cards, she's actually able to say what they are.
Bum, bum, bum.
Now, she only says this to herself, and I think it might actually just be in her head.
The second one she says out loud.
But the student and Shoichi don't get either of them right. She gets them both correct, and seemingly having confirmed to the audience that she has psychic powers, walks away. This
that
is
probably a, won't come up later.
This is a turn that I was not expecting in this show.
Yeah, we went from RoboCop to X-Men real fast.
Yep. Back at the lab, Makumo's computer program is able to successfully unblock H2, and we cut away from there.
Quick, before we get any context on what this means for the series, leave.
We cut to a man walking his dog in a park, and the dog stops at a tree and starts barking, and he looks up and he sees a scarf. Oh no.
Does what you always do when you see a scarf hanging in a tree.
He's like, ooh, free scarf. Yoink.
Yoink.
And he finds a dead girl stuffed inside the tree.
Ooh, free dead girl. It's complimentary. It comes with the tree. You don't have to ask for it. It comes with the surface.
Internment's a freebie that comes with the purchase. So, wouldn't you know it, Scumbag Hojo and Kano show up.
Ah, Scumbag Hojo.
And Hojo, not caring at all that a high school-aged girl's life has been cut tragically short, is like, ha, this girl's death proves that Akawa was lying.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, hi, thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
And Kano's like, that's a huge jump in logic? Are your knees hurting? And Hojo's like, because this is the same method that the other people were killed by. And if the monster that Hikawa claims exists was in fact killed, then why would these deaths be happening the same way?
There couldn't possibly be two of them. Yeah.
Checkmate atheists. And Kano's like, I don't have enough personality to really try and go against you on this, boss.
We'll get his response in a few episodes when his character's been fleshed out a little more.
We get Hakawa driving in his car when Ozawa calls and says that they have a program that is able to look at the topography of this picture and match it to real-world topography in Japan, and that, hey, it's got to be this particular mountain because you can see it from Tokyo. Here are the coordinates.
If you're wondering where the origin of that program that asks you which of these are stop signs, if you're wondering where they came from, it's here. It's this series. Like, I find it hilarious because they've got these computers that are capable of sussing out the exact profiles of different landmarks in Japan, but they're running it on computers that look like it was NASA in 1967.
Yes, it's all wireframe and DOS.
Yep.
But it can identify the topography of a photo.
It cannot display the image because that requires too many bits, but it can identify the shit out of it.
Yes. We then cut back to the Misugi residence, and Shoichi has just finished cooking, and he says he needs someone to do a taste test. And Mana and Taichi have been watching TV, some sort of talk show that's discussing a cooking manga that's popular with all the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But Toshiko gives a little bit to Taichi, a little bit to Mana, just drops it in their hands, and then uses the chopsticks to eat it himself, and they all agree that it's good. And Shoichi's like, so does that mean you like spinach? And Taichi's like, oh no, this means you're going to be cooking spinach dishes for the next week. And Shoichi's like, how did you know?
I don't have a pattern. You have a pattern. Leave me alone.
Mana then brings up that apparently Shoichi doesn't use salt or sugar in any of his cooking.
Wait, so how does his food taste good?
There's more than two types of seasoning, ya dingus.
And the professor's like, oh, maybe he doesn't do any of these things because he's diabetic. And Shoichi gets this look of horror on his face. First off, no, he clearly cannot be, or he would have gone into diabetic shock at some point.
Well, to be fair, there's no extra sugar in the food to trigger any kind of diabetic reaction.
But there's got to be at least some to keep him regulated.
That's fair. Maybe it's the fresh vegetables and fruits?
Hard to say. But then Mana's like, hey, don't say that. You know he believes everything you tell him.
Well, he's stupid. He is very cute. That's why we name him Himbo.
And feeling particularly spiteful, the professor's like, or, you know, it could be heart disease or high cholesterol.
And we proceed to watch this man just crumble and collapse on himself.
The Shoichi, yes, curls up into the fetal position, hand over his head. Truly, in this moment, believing he has every single one of these diseases.
Yeah, this is how you accosted people before we had WebMD. Now you can self-diagnose yourself into an existential crisis. Back then, you needed a professor to do it.
On the street, Hojo and Kano decide that they're going to stalk the dead girl's twin sister.
So they go to a playground in trench coats and stand in the bushes.
Don't be suspicious.
Might be my modern sensibilities again, but I don't know if standing in trench coats next to playgrounds in the bushes and just watching is ever a good look.
I don't think it was ever a good look.
You know, there was one season back in the late year of 1968 where it was in vogue. There were just rings of people in trench coats watching empty playgrounds.
You're making things up.
I have never. Okay, yeah.
Well, imagine my shock.
In the Itabashi Ward, Hikawa goes into a convenience store. I guess because he wants a drink or something.
Phone call. He's using the public telephone.
And while he's going to make this phone call, he looks up and sees the exact photo minus the kid up on the wall. And
it's a very old photo, too.
Yeah. And he asks the shopkeep about it, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's a real famous photo of the area. That's a particular lake. It was a great sightseeing place. Lake was filled in completely 10 years ago.
Bum, bum, bum.
We then also briefly cut back to Hojo and Kano stalking this child while she's on the playground looking at even younger children and weeping.
I don't want context.
It doesn't make it better.
No.
We cut back to Hikawa as he calls Ozawa to relay the information, like, hey, so I found the area. The lake was filled in 10 years ago, but how could this be? The photo was taken days ago.
So we got some weird wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey shit going on.
We've got a mystery here.
dude, I am actually kind of into this. You know, we're billing it as kind of a mystery. There's clearly some outside forces going on. I'm excited.
Hojo looks over by another tree and happens to see Alpis. And Alpis also does the hand thing, although it might be slightly different than the one Ludius did. And then Alpis pushes the girl off the swing.
Monsters that don't kill. They're just dicks to kids.
As this happens, we get a flash to Shoichi and Ryu, who once again are writhing in pain as that sound starts.
Seizure time. Come on, grab your friends.
Oh, no. We also see that Ryo's stomach is glowing. And Mana briefly comes outside, sees that Shoichi is hunched over, and we also see that his stomach is glowing as well.
I don't know what he has, but I don't think it's any of the things that guy listed earlier.
No, but we do seem to see that stomach glowy and sound is occurring with when the halos light up on the monsters?
Yeah, like when their powers are active.
Interesting. And Shoichi just leaves?
This whole time, Shoichi in particular has been very expressive. A lot of emotional content on the face of this character, communicating with expression, with his eyes, and body language. And all of that drops. The light shines, he's hunched over, and when he goes to leave, he is flat affect, just moving like an automaton.
Yeah, it's as if something has taken over him. In the G3 trailer, Ozawa and Nomura are discussing the possibilities of this photo when they get the announcement that an unidentified has been located. They call Hikawa. He's like, all right, I'll meet you there. In the street, Shoichi's on his bike taking off. He's going at a fairly slow pace, at least to start, because Mana's able to keep up with him on a pedal bike.
Yeah, we went from the Go Ram to Pedal Power 9000.
We cut back to the park. Hojo is trying to do something to Alpis. He finally draws his gun and shoots, and once again the bullets stop in front and dissolve into the air. He and Kano are clearly frightened. Alpis goes in for the kill.
Grabs Hojo, picks him up, puts him against a tree with a giant hole in it.
We cut back to the street. Hikawa is driving, and he happens to see the trailer coming up behind him, so he just parks on the side of the road and gets out to jump into the trailer and get suited up into the G3 armor. At the park, yeah, Hojo is getting stuffed into a tree hole by Alpis.
Shh, shh, no words, only dreams.
When Hikawa shows up in the G3 and starts fighting with Alpis, doing his best.
Our very first bike foo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hikawa shows up on the bike, rams right into Alpis, sends them flying.
Unfortunately saving Mojo Hojo's life.
Kano runs up, grabs Hojo, and is like, let's get out of here. Only he doesn't actually say anything. We then somehow find ourselves at a construction site. You know, construction site right next to the playground. That's how these things are set up. And we get to see some new weaponry for G3.
Yeah, Hikawa's just absolutely done with this kitty cat bullshit. Instead of just starting with the pistol and seeing where things go, he opens all the buttons, he goes ahead and he grabs a thing that ends up being a freaking sword. He gets another bit out. He'll get to that in a minute.
G3's sword is called GSO3 Destroyer.
So we've got Scorpion as the gun, and Destroyer is the sword. And it's a Gundam 00.
Yeah, it's the 00 Riser Blade.
Yes.
And it's sweet.
It's also apparently a Vibroblade. So he fights with Alpis some. Tristis shows up, and suddenly it's a 2-on-1.
Ayo!
Goodness.
As this fight's going on and G3 is getting wrecked, because,
two kitty cats, yeah.
Shoichi just walks in and hits the buttons on the side and his belt...
Slay! Slay!
His belt lights up, and wouldn't you know it, it's so bright that the G3 camera can't get a good look on who he is.
Oh, that's so weird.
Alpis and Tristis come, like, oh, bright light thing, let's go attack it.
You know, as a kitty cat do.
As a kitty cat do, with bright light. And we get an old favorite of mine, a punch, punch, kick, kick, Henshin.
Yeah. Oh, the combat transformation. Yeah, very cool.
That looks so good.
And suddenly... it's Agito. So I guess that settles our discussion of who's who.
Shoichi is Agito.
Yep, a redheaded stepchild hasn't transformed yet, but he's got the same glowy belt, so.
I'm guessing he's the green one from the opening credits. Eventually, Agito ends up going up against Tristis while G3 is still fighting Alpas, and we get a moment where Tristis summons his halo and makes it grow bigger and pulls a spear out of it.
Just like a portal in Rick and Morty.
But it's okay, because Agito also pulls a bladed thing out of his belt.
Yeah, giant phallus erupts from his midriff, and he pulls this huge, long, girthy shaft right out of his pelvis that tends into a double-bladed spear.
You put a lot of emphasis where it wasn't necessarily required.
It was phallic as shit. Were we watching the same video?
That's why I said necessarily.
I call it the compensator.
And he form shifts.
Agito Storm form is his more agile form. It has a punching power of 3 tons in its right arm, 7 tons in its left arm, a kicking power of 5 tons, a max jump height of 50 meters, and can run 100 meters in 4.5 seconds. It comes equipped with the Storm Halberd. Its finisher is the Halberd Spin.
Storm Halberd's pretty cool.
Storm Halberd is very cool.
This is an absolute 100% improvement off of Blue Dragon.
Dragon form.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks great.
Ain't no piggity pokes here. Cutting kitty cats in half.
Also, Alpas also makes their halo grow bigger and pulls a bow with no string and arrows out.
Magic.
Yep.
Did you notice that Storm form was only the chest and left arm?
I did notice that.
Oh, the rest of it didn't change at all?
At least
I assumed it was just minimal.
No, I noticed particularly the left shoulder changes noticeably.
So we're setting ourselves for partial transformations and partial
presumably there will be another form that's on the right side then, I would think. Alpas starts shooting arrows at G3.
Yeah, he does to G3 what Lurtz did to Boromir in Lord of the Rings. He just empties the clip.
We've gotten some great practical effects during this fight scene, the vibrosword cutting through machinery. Yeah, he goes flying back and stuff just comes raining down on him from the arrows.
Yeah.
They put a lot into these fights. They look amazing.
Yep, they had the budget to blow up cars. They've damn sure got the budget to do these scenes well, and they do.
Hikawa's finally like, fuck this. Goes back to his bike, opens up pods 1 and 2, pulls out the scorpion and another attachment, like a grenade launcher.
G3's grenade launcher attachment is the GGO2 Salamander.
That's a dope name for a underslung grenade launcher.
So he attaches the salamander to the scorpion and proceeds to say, parry this, you filthy casual.
He shoots him in the chest with a grenade launcher. It was spectacular. It was my favorite part of the episode.
While he's doing this, Agito does his storm finisher against Tristis, and once again, Halo explode. There's a moment where G3's like, oh no, I don't know how to reload this thing. Or maybe it only has one shot?
No, he straight up looked at the gun like he didn't know how to reload it. Like, they never thought that far ahead. They're like, 2 shots? What the hell could take 2 shots from the grenade launcher?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's supposed to survive one.
What happens if there are 2 enemies? That never happens. Calm down.
ULFs never attacked in groups except for that one time.
Yeah, we are training for one specific non-negotiable scenario, fighting one ULF at a time.
So Agito switches back to his ground form. Crest fans out again. He does his rider kick.
His rider kick is dope.
I like his rider kick. It's the wind-up to it that makes it look so good, because the kick itself isn't that flashy.
And the after pose.
Yeah, his stance and slow turn.
So, right, that kind of speaks to the same sort of trance-like thing for Shoichi, because every part of what Agito does during this fight sequence looks over-choreographed. And not in, like, in a way that reflects negatively on the choreographers. It feels like muscle memory of somebody who's kind of shut down just going through the motions that are pre-programmed. Because he assumes the stance, does the change, takes the necessary number of steps, jumps, kicks, lands, and just shifts into position and waits for the explosion. Like, this dude's on autopilot.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Still cool as hell, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this baseline is him on autopilot. I'm so hyped for this series.
Hikawa gets up. He's like, I saw you before. Who are you? And Agito turns and looks at him and runs and jumps to go do like Achilles from Troy jump attack. And that's where the episode ends.
You look awful monster-y. Want to throw hands?
All right, what do we want to pick as our scale?
How about disembodied hands?
Yeah.
I like disembodied hands.
So are we rating the two monsters individually or collectively? Because they seemed to be a buddy act.
I'm okay with buddy act.
You want to go first or you want me to?
Alpis and Tristis are our first examples of one of my biggest problems with the Lords overall, palette swaps. Ludius was already lacking in everything but his plan, and these guys even copied that. The only thing unique besides their colors is their weapons. Not enough to save them, too, and that's strictly because they put in the effort to make three costumes.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll go with an even three. Like, we haven't improved on our formula. I thought Ludius was fairly unique in his kill strategy, but now that I know it's just three cats doing the same thing, it does evoke some, like, tribal elements, so it makes their appear some sort of enemy cohesion, but that's not enough to save it from being a little blasé. They both summoned a weapon. One was a spear, and one was a bone spear. Cool. Pretty average stuff.
It does make me wonder what Ludius's weapon would have been. Hopefully it was the dual sword so that he was, in fact, Osei.
Yellow spear. Oh, you know what Ludius means, by the way? I looked it up.
What?
Yellow.
Oh.
He's the yellow kitty cat.
Then why did he have the red scarf?
So he wasn't just yellow, Jared.
Tristis had the yellow scarf.
Who do you think gave it to him?
I don't have enough evidence to try and counter that.
Good. That'll exist in this margin.
They are admittedly just palette swaps. I like Alpis a bit better because they also went with the spots. So there's a bit more interesting visual there, but they are effectively the same thing, just different colors. And yeah, I guess all Pantheras do the same ritualistic method for killing people. So it does take away the originality of it. It's just like, okay, this is how they do things. Yeah, I think I do have to go down a bit. I think 2.5.
Which gives us 2.5 disembodied hands. That's easy math.
Yeah.
He did the monster mash. The monster
mash. Ooh, separate or together?
They would probably just copy Ludius moves in bed too. Unless it's a threesome, I see no reason return to that well. Mash both, or pass on both.
Mash both or pass individually?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Got it. Yep, that tracks.
Fair enough. Episode?
In a vacuum, there isn't much to this episode. We developed some things from last episode, but we're still very much in the setup phase of the show. It didn't wow me, but it also didn't bore me. I'll give this a 3.
Yeah, I'm actually going to give it a little more gas than that. I'm going to go with a 3.5 on this one, and only because I really, really enjoy the level of intrigue. You might have remembered there were a couple of Koog episodes that tended to be my favorite where there were X-Files-y things going on, like unexplained phenomena, and this whole setup for this series feels very X-Files-y, and I hope it continues.
This first arc is called the Impossible Crime Arc.
Interesting.
Yeah. So based on that, I'm going to bump it to a 3.5. We got some solid combat. We got our first form change, and it's a partial form change. So while this episode might not have had everything I wanted, it hinted at everything to come, and that's even cooler, I think. It's good world building.
This episode left a lot of questions to me. What's the deal with Mana's psychic powers? What's the deal with Shoichi and Ryu's glowing stomachs? Clearly this has something to do with Agito, but then what is Agito? What's the deal with the Pantheras and presumably the other lords? How do they choose their victims? Is this another game like the Garonki or something else? I'm left with a lot of questions that I'm assuming the show over the course of the season will answer for me, or probably answer some and others will be in the manual.
Yep.
I think all of those are answered.
Cool.
Good.
I guess there is also the mystery of the photo that is somehow days but also decades old simultaneously in the disembodied hand. There's a lot of intrigue here.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that. The combat looks great. We see a, in every way, shape, and form, better dragon form in yes. Storm. At the same time, though, I feel it's almost too early to put a form change in, being episode 2. I'm used to multiple Kamen Riders showing up that early, not necessarily a form change. But it's cool. I think I'm going to go with a 3.5 for this. So that gives us a 3.333 repeating disembodied hands. This is a solid start.
I'll tell you the vibe I get. This series feels to Kamen Rider Kuga like Endless Waltz felt to Gundam Wing. It feels like the artists had more time and more budget to flesh out the concepts better. It feels like things were more thoughtful. It feels like they took all the missed opportunities they had from Kuga and found a vehicle to express them. Here's the design space. Have fun with it. And I love it.
I think it looks great. The fact that the preview for the next episode shows a different species of Lord, I like that, because I think if there'd been another cat, I would have been like, all right, this is getting old. Give us something different.
Kamen Rider, Oops All Kitty Cats Edition.
I do think that based off what we're seeing, yes, the palette swapping is going to get old eventually. But the armors of the riders themselves look great. There's an interesting story going on. I am excited to see where this series goes.
I will say one of the best things about Inoue is his world building. And this is no exception.
Yeah, I have to agree. I'm immediately hooked. Like, there are plot points that I need to know, and I'm resisting the urge to Google them on the way home.
Certainly. It's good to be back and doing this.
It is. God, it feels good to be back.
So, with that, join us next week for Episode 3, My Transformation.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. You can get our running commentary on every episode as well as bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes like Kuga's special 50th episode.
I'm gonna have a freaking brain aneurysm with the dings.